Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery. With your host, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCB 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Oh, welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren, and it's Mr. Dave Martino.
I'm back.
You're back. Walking
back
man.
For the attack.
Yeah, back for the attack. He's a walking man. Your car broke down in the cold.
Yes. No, at least it was right in front of my house.
Well, yeah.
That's okay.
Could be worse. It could have been out 30 miles away from home.
That's right. So middle I count myself blizzard. Lucky.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, God. Yeah. God. Like, it could be much, much worse, you know.
Few times that I leave the basement of the House of Mystery.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the auto lock opens for an hour.
For an hour, and that's it.
And that's it. Be back in time, or Igor goes out looking.
That's right. Drags me back.
That's right. It's kind of strange. Well, Noir at the Bar is running and up and running. It's on our Seattle channel, KKNW, 1150. It's on Thursdays at 3:30 p.m. Here are some of your favorite authors read from their new books. And it's in it's in conjunction with Left Coast Crime, which is happening in Seattle April 11th to 14th. So all the authors reading will be there. So you can listen to them, meet them, and get them to sign a book. Or you don't. I don't know.
Be there or be square.
Yeah. 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 Anyway. Well, we have got another author with us today, and we're going to be talking about her new book. And it's The Psychologist's Shadow. It's a simmering, slow burn suspense. Laurie A. Egan, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. This is a repeat, I believe. We did another chat about a year ago or so, I think, and it was a pleasure.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's all a blur to me. I couldn't tell you the date. I'd have to look it up. We got so many recordings going week to week to week, year to year. You know, we do over 200 interviews a year for this show alone.
Wow.
So
that's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. My eyes are bleeding. No. Yeah, no, it's a good thing. But, you know, meet a lot of people, learn a lot. So what's been going on with you this last year or so? I guess you've been working, of course. Is that how long it takes you to put out a book like this? Do you do one about every year?
Well, I can't really say, because it really just depends on where the contracts come in, the publishers, the schedule. What's happened to me this last year has been very interesting, because I decided to try a British publisher, Spectrum Books, and Andrew May wound up taking four manuscripts, which pretty much cleaned off my desk, as you can imagine. And Andrew has been on a feverish pace with these, and he published a book of mine in August, The Firefly, and then The Psychologist's Shadow is the second book, and then that was followed in December by two novellas, which are very literary and strange with magical realism and sort of Orlando-esque touches. And then I have another book coming out in the late spring. So I've been really busy, and Andrew is keeping me stuck on the computer, I think.
Well, you know, it's a good thing, you know, if it, you know, the
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger. Feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Demand for something is good, you know, in a way, you know, do it while you can.
Well, right? That's very much the point. I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a good thing, you know. Let's get into this book here. What is the basic premise for readers? So when they're going to pick up the book, kind of what's the storyline?
Well, this is about a young therapist, Dr. Ellen Haskell, and she had a practice in New York City and then had a very traumatic experience with one of her clients and then decided she just couldn't stay there. So she moved to Princeton, where her parents live, on the outskirts of town in Hopewell on a 10-acre wooded lot. And she is in the process of setting up a new practice in Princeton, right in town. And so as we get to know her clients, this has become a very interesting part of the book, because you actually sit in on sessions or little parts of sessions. And everything is going along pretty well. And then all of a sudden, Ellen starts receiving hang-up calls. Now, this is set in 1992. So this is, you know, back in the old days before cell phones, et cetera. And so she was getting these calls and nobody was there. It was just like, you know, a click. And then there were presents that started to appear on the steps to her second floor office. And then, more frightening yet, things started happening at her home, and her parents are now gone. They're in Greece on a long vacation. So she's by herself there. So the idea is that as Ellen begins to become aware, she's got a follower, so does the reader. And as a result, you know, the reader has to put on a thinking cap and try to figure out, okay, who is the stalker? And then, as I was saying, interspersed in between the main narrative, there are journal entries that are very short, about a half a page, written by the stalker. And so as a result, you've got this sort of eerie, strange, discordant counterpoint to the main narrative. So that's sort of the structure, and things just sort of slowly start boiling and, you know, heating up as Ellen becomes more fearful and aware she's got a serious problem.
Now, a couple of things I noticed. So in this, you say that you actually, it's like sitting in a session. You've got these sessions that are happening. So how do you come up with that setting in a way of dialogue? Like, how do you create it? Did you go to settings? Did you go to sessions yourself, or did you know someone doing it, or how does that happen?
Well, I started out in college and university, and I took quite a bit of abnormal psychology, and we did case studies, which I loved doing, and I have to say I was really good at them. And then I've always kept up a bit on psychology, and I've had friends and lovers that are therapists, and I've had, you know, my own personal therapy sessions. So I have sort of borrowed a little bit from everybody and all my various experiences. And what I've tried to do is, for each of these clients, I try to create a presentation, a backstory, their history, you know, how they would dress, how they would talk, what their mannerisms would be, and try to be very consistent with whatever they're presenting as their psychological problem. So each of the characters is very different in age. Ellen really enjoys doing work with creative people, so there are quite a few of those in here. And they're, you know, a real mixed bag of different types. So that was really the background for me, but it was so much fun to do. It really was. It was a challenge, but fun.
You must have studied my case then, if you were doing it. But, you know, when you sat in these sessions, so whose point of view are you giving there? Like, whose perspective are you writing it from? Is it from the doctor?
Yeah, this is definitely told from, except for those journal entries that are by the stalker. These are, you know, the whole story is really a portrait of Ellen and her experiences. So, you know, the reader encounters these various things that happen to her, you know, as she experiences them.
So you, do you like writing from first person point of view? Is that kind of your favorite?
I do, but I wouldn't say it's necessarily my favorite. Sometimes I use it in different ways. Like I have the book that's coming out in the spring, Jack and I. It's about a boy with dissociative identity disorder. So what I did was the host personality, Jack, is written from first person, and the alternate personality is written in third person. And I wanted to, you know, create that juxtaposition, but also the difference. So sometimes I will do that very deliberately. So I wouldn't say I have a favorite. I like doing both.
Do you find that difficult to do in the same book without confusing the reader?
I don't think so, because I usually separate them either in different chapters or, you know, with text breaks, so that the reader knows, and the pattern is established, so the reader knows, you know who the narrator is, who's so-called talking.
Well, why 1992? Why that year for a setting? I know that was a great year for me because I met my wife that year. So
congratulations.
Oh,
for him, yeah.
Yeah, for me.
Well, I wanted to get past the cell phone era, or the, you know, the time when internet came in, because that those two things really, really affect how an author, particularly an author of crime fiction or mysteries, it's really hard, because the constant connectiveness and the connection to information is really an impediment. Whereas the old-fashioned way of sleuthing, I find much more interesting. So I often avoid present-day work just because I think it's I like the sort of solitary quality of and the disconnection from other people.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Do you have to do a lot of research into the 90s when going back and writing a thriller of this type? I know I have something that I'm writing right now that takes place then, and I'm actually going back because I have to jog my memory a bit.
No, Laurie's so young. She's, you know, she's only 20. She needs, of course she has to.
Yes,
no, not quite. I have to double check certain things, like, you know, when a film came out that might have been important, or music, or sometimes certain items, particularly technology. You know, for example, I'm working on a book right now set up roughly in this period. And, you know, what did we have? We had those Motorola box phones, for example, where you could plug it into your cigarette lighter or whatever. And, you know, so, you know, to try to be accurate about those. And I'm also working on something where there's a murder. And, you know, what the police were able to do in terms of DNA, the speed and the accuracy and the, you know, what they would do about, you know, crime scene stuff. A lot of that's very complicated to find out in hindsight.
And okay, so now your main character, your Dr. Ellen Haskell, where does she come from and how would you describe that character?
Well, she grew up in the city, and her parents got jobs at Princeton University. They're both retired now, so they've built a house out in the country, you know, very secluded, modern, lots of glass, of course, just to make it a little creepier. Ellen is a very empathetic woman, very smart, very intelligent. She's fairly brave in many ways. So when she starts to see that she's got a stalker, she does contact the police in both her home area as well as in Princeton. But because of the nature of being a therapist, she's not supposed to really disclose a lot of information about her clients. So she's sort of in a bind because she doesn't really quite know how much information to provide to the law enforcement people. So I think she's a very interesting character. She's I like her a lot. She's got some courage and curiosity and a lot of really good attributes.
Right. And I would imagine, of course, she's got the stalker that comes, but you also must try to challenge your character throughout the work, right? Each chapter, there's always some sort of new thing to go through. Or do you do it that way?
Well, I write organically, so I sort of, you know, I knew what the end zone was, but I didn't know quite how I was going to get there. And you know, it's interesting when you're writing characters. I think you've got to let them, you have to get to know them just like you would if you were making a new friend. And so as a result, that's also what Ellen has to do here, is that she's got to get to know these new clients of hers. And they're very different. So she does have a bit of a struggle with that, as any therapist would. And I think it's very interesting. I think each of these characters is very interesting unto themselves. And as one character may drop something that resonates with her concerns about this stalker, she thinks, well, maybe that's the person that's following me and leaving me messages on the phone. But then maybe the next one says something or does something or reports a dream that makes her wonder. So there's this constant process of her going through in the sessions and trying to focus on the client and what's going on, but also secondarily, she's got this other thing running in the back of her mind about, well, wait a minute, is this the person that's following me?
Well, since you're writing organically, you know, by the seat of your pants, do the characters ever surprise you, and do they kind of pull the plot, you know, along with them as they go?
Well, I think you have to be honest with the characters are going to grow unto themselves. And that's something that I really try to be very careful about, letting them do that, because otherwise it won't work. The dialogue won't feel genuine or authentic. You know, as I said, with this book, I had an end idea. I don't always, but I really tried to understand each of these clients and any other characters in the book so that they felt very much themselves and different from the other ones. So that there's not a sameness to the texture of their personalities.
Well, and how do you go about the dialogue? Let's say, especially when you've got so many characters, you've got all these people, you know, going in for sessions and stuff like that. So do you write each one independently and then put them all into the room, or how does that work for you? How is that set up?
Well, I created a schedule, so, as a therapist would. You know, she would have her Monday clients, Tuesday clients, et cetera. And then because she's just starting this new practice, she's got, you know, I think it's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday off. So I followed the rotation of the clients. And so each section is that. And, you know, maybe multiples, like it could be the afternoon clients, for example. And I wrote each one separately, but they all, you know, it flows together because she's seeing them in her office like that.
And I have to ask, your main character, Ellen Haskell, how do you see that character? How do you experience that character, and what would you consider that character? How do you describe the relationship?
I really like this character a lot. It's, you know, I think most authors tend to like their protagonists unless they're the bad guys, which I sometimes write too. But I was just very impressed with her calm and her ability to sort of stay focused, not only in sessions, because that's a really important attribute of a therapist, but also when she's on her own and she's dealing with, you know, being by herself and being solitary because she's, you know, doesn't know anybody in the area really. And her parents are gone and she has to deal with this whole stalker thing by herself, essentially. And I think that her presence of mind and her steadiness are really admirable. But she is scared. She does get scared and she does sort of freak out because this house that she's living in has all this glass and there's nobody else nearby. It's on a small street in the country. So, you know, she starts getting worried and putting blankets and things over the windows and, you know, because there are no curtains. And so, you know, she's a very interesting character. And I think people will enjoy reading about her.
Can you hear her? Is that how you create dialogue or do you have some other way?
Sometimes I do definitely channel a character who comes into my head. And I can't explain that process, but I know I'm not alone because I've heard other authors say the same thing. Where, like, one day I was sitting on my deck and all of a sudden this gay tenor opera singer came floating into my head. He wouldn't go away. So I finally came in and I sat at my computer and opened a document and he just came out, his voice, everything. And that's happened to me a number of times. But in this book, I can't say that that's the case. If anything, I did hear some of the clients a little better than I heard Ellen Haskell herself. You know, so she was more of a creation rather than a channeling of sorts. But it's sort of fun when you all of a sudden get these characters in your head.
Well, and so you wrote up journal entries from the stalker itself. How do you like doing something like that, taking someone that's obviously a kind of a demented or a little bit evil or has
an disturbed issue? Definitely disturbed.
Yeah. So what do you do to get yourself in the right frame of mind? Read Dave's book or?
Well, one of the tricks about writing the journal entries was not to give anything away, but to give something away, to provide clues about the obsessive nature of this, you know, problem that the character has. So it was a very fine balance between the two, between being open and reporting as one would in a journal versus saying too much and making it too obvious who the stalker is. Interestingly enough, I've had a couple of therapist friends read this book and they haven't figured out the identity of the stalker. So I felt really pretty happy with myself, to tell you the truth. But this is a challenge. There are little hints and little clues, but I think the readers are going to have fun trying to figure out the identity of this person.
It's strange, eh? So what do you hope that the reader gets out of the book after they read it?
Well, it doesn't have any really large themes, except for the fact that I think the example that Dr. Ellen Haskell sets is really a good one. And I think it's a very good portrayal of a therapist, because at a therapist best. And in that sense, I think it advances the opinion of people for, you know, psychotherapy and the whole profession. And I think that there is a story about, you know, getting through something really traumatic and then starting again. So that sense of renewal, which happens at the very beginning of the book when she's dealt with a trauma at the very, very beginning. And then this sort of traumatic kind of thing repeats in a different fashion. So in a sense that renewal and, you know, sticking to your life and just keep trying, that kind of theme is definitely through the book.
Well, that theme or subtext. Now, do you start with a theme like that and create a story, or do you have the story, or did you start with your characters and decide how you're going to, you know, work them?
Well, I really was very interested in the whole stalking phenomenon, which was actually just really hitting the ground in 1992. And in fact, there in New Jersey here, there were no laws yet against stalking, but there were in California and a few other places. So this was relatively a new problem that was really becoming recognized. I mean, there were celebrity stalkers, and, you know, these were, you know, hit the rag sheets, but also this is just becoming more a part of our consciousness in terms of the country. So I think I was starting out with the premise of, what if a therapist acquires a follower? And what kind of follower would that be? And what kind of psychological makeup, what kind of history would that person have? This particular one is an erotomaniac, which is not what it sounds like. It's not necessarily sexual. It is just an obsessive following, like, you know, religious cult, or, you know, some of the other things similar to that. Or the impulse to set fire to buildings, you know, any of these kinds of obsessive types of psychological issues. And so I really started with the stalking idea, and then I immediately jumped right into the therapist as being the person who would be, the stalker would be attached to.
Do you think about, like, I don't know, because you're saying slow burn suspense. So is the action or violence that you put into a book, are you conscious of how much of it you do, or what kind of, like, how you describe it?
There's, you know, really, there. Most of the scenes are sort of eerie or creepy, but they're not necessarily violent. There is one scene, but I try to be a little careful about that. I'm not a blood and gore writer, which I think is more of the case for your thriller or, you know, the big best-selling types of suspense novels. And this book is a little quieter, maybe even a little more literary in a sense that it's very character-oriented. But, you know, there is some, because of those journal entries, there's that sense of, you know, uneasy quality to the whole book. So yeah, I don't, you know, I wouldn't say this is really a violent book except for maybe one scene.
Well, when you put yourself into something like this and you go through, you know, you're kind of living out the details of the stalker, of the doctor, all the sessions, the different characters, and you kind of live through this whole experience as you're writing it. At the end of it, but when you look back, do you feel like it's changed you in some way?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. Don't know that it has. I think it just reminded me that I really love the psychological aspects of writing a character. And that, you know, I've written, you know, about 5 books in the psychological suspense category out of the 13 books I've published, traditionally published, and one that's a sort of a literary suspense, if you can, if there is such a thing. So I think that there's definitely a fascination with the way people think and how they behave and how their history, their parents, their backgrounds affect their adulthood and their lives. And I have written some that are about teenagers or younger adults, so they're in the process. And these books have, you know, I think have been very interesting to write for me. And I've written a couple that were a little more autobiographical, like Once Upon an Island, which is set in St. Croix. And that book was very nostalgic because I was there in 1965 when the setting takes place. And it was like really going back in time for me. So that book affected me much more than this one did. But I think this one is not only a good read, but I think it's also fascinating because of the presentations of the various sessions and the clients.
So did you come across any people out there or people you know that you've been inspired or have inspired some of the characters you've written?
Here are a few people that I very, very loosely based, maybe on looks more than anything else. Yeah, maybe a few, but not anybody that is succinctly copied from real life. I think you've got to be really careful about that because somebody's going to notice that. And so I try to avoid that if I can. So, yeah.
I was hoping for some names, and then we could maybe get them on the line.
No.
So do you think you're a little bit, you write more dialogue heavy, or do you think it's more description heavy? How do you describe your writing?
Well, this book, needless to say, has quite a bit of dialogue in it. There is also quite a bit of narrative because she's on her own and she's thinking a lot and not only reviewing the sessions and thinking about her various people that she's involved with, but also about her life and process and living alone and you know, wondering when she's going to meet somebody and, you know, that kind of thing. There is a lot of dialogue in this book, and that was something that was very difficult to write because, as I said, it has to really track with the person, and it has to be the kind of thing, like there's a high school student, so you've got to sort of write from that perspective, you know, one that's very dreamy, and another character is very dreamy and, you know, just sort of wafty, and she's... you can't quite tell what really has happened to her over the week. You know, she's sort of vague. So that, you know, she's going to talk completely differently than the girl in high school. So each of these characters is very different. And so the dialogue really has to capture in a nutshell that person.
Yeah. Do you have a trick to making it sound real? Like, I know in some cases, like, because we do the noir and I know that people read, and sometimes the dialogue, when it doesn't sound real when it's read out. Do you read out your dialogue out loud, or do you have kind of a Do you play act, dress up, or like what?
you just want to get me certifiable. I can tell.
I do. Yeah, I've got the doctor on line three right now.
Okay, let's do that.
No, yeah, let's do that. Let's get into therapy. No, I was just wondering if you do you have a certain way of trying to make sure your dialogue's real, or does it just work for you?
I occasionally will read something out loud, but it seems to me I hear my dialogue pretty well. One of the things I tend to do, which I'm always battling with myself, is I tend to truncate dialogue too much. So the normal pattern that two people would have is usually a little more expanded than I write it first. So, and I tend to be reserved. That's my upbringing and my parents, and we just weren't the touchy-feely family. And so as a result, expressing anger or any negative emotions is much harder for me to write than just sort of average dialogue. So I struggle a little with that, and I'm constantly sort of yelling at myself to, you know, get more involved, roll up my sleeves, and get into the person's head that's talking.
Yeah, there's always, yeah, because you got to make sure it's right, you know, it has to read right. So what are you working on now? Like, what's going on under the scenes? You said you had a lot going on. Are you working on another book right now?
Yes, I am, which was written about the same time as The Psychologist's Shadow. And it's been under my bed, under the mattress, all these years, since about 1993. And when when Andrew May at Spectrum, this actually is an Enigma book, which is an imprint of Spectrum Books, and this is the first book in the new series. When he took four manuscripts, I was like, oh my God, I don't have anything to do. So I rushed to pull this out, and I thought, oh my God, this is just awful. I mean, point of view perspective switches in the middle of a paragraph, and oh my God, even the formatting was terrible. So I almost threw it across the room and said, forget it. And then I decided, well, wait a minute, it is a good plot, so let's just stick to it. So I have been suffering through this huge manuscript, very complicated, with multiple characters. The police are involved, and this is a murder mystery. So that's what I've been working on. It's based on a town near me called Fair Haven, which is lovely, a lovely ironic name for a murder mystery location. So that's what I'm working on now, and I've been trying to cut it because I think it's too big, but I can't seem to do that. So it's been a real frustration. And then I thought I was doing pretty well. And then I met with a retired police officer from Fairhaven who set me straight on a bunch of things. And then I also encountered a prosecutor for our county who is also retired. And he told me a whole bunch of things about who would be at the crime scene, who would lead the investigation. Oh my God, it just completely messed me up. So I've had to do a huge amount of rewriting on this one. I hope I can finish it. I think I will.
Yeah, it seems impossible, and that it all kind of works out, right?
Usually, yeah. I've never really given up on anything when I have a first draft.
Yeah, it all has its different time in life, you know, and it works. When you go back to something like that, too, an older draft, it's you know, what you were writing like in 1990s. Compared to now will be completely different. You know what I mean? Like you've got a lot more experience now.
Yeah, no, I just cursed at myself all the way through reading this thing at the beginning. I just couldn't believe I was didn't know so many things. I mean, even to do the manuscript in 1.5 line spaces instead of 2. I mean, unbelievable. It was just horrific for me to do this, and it just really took a lot of grit for me to sit down and fix this thing.
You fired yourself several times.
Yes, I did.
Yeah, that's enough. You know, can't take it. Well, that's cool. So listen, you do website, social media. Do you like to interact with readers? And if you do, how do you like to do that?
I do. I'm on X or Twitter. I'm on Instagram, although I don't post as often there. And mostly I'm on Facebook, LinkedIn, and you know, various other places. And my website is it's basically my name, Laurie A. Egan. And so anybody can come and see the various books that I've done, which, as I say, quite a few novels, but also a story collection and four volumes of poetry. So I've been busy.
Yeah, always. When you bring back a story from the 90s, something like that, is it hard to bring the characters in the book back to life, like to reconnect with them?
Yeah, a little bit, but it was more the writing style and the that was where I was really banging my head against the wall when I tried to go back and fix this. The characters I thought were pretty smartly done, but I improved them in each case on this, current version of the book. So I really thought that the book was finished. I mean, I had gone through it about five or six times already. And I will go through, normally I go through a manuscript 30 to 40 times before I, send it to a publisher. So, which is what I did again. So this one, really got worked over.
What's the biggest challenge, do you think, for writing for you?
Perfectionism, maybe. I tend to be really finicky. And my background was, I was a book designer at Princeton University Press for many years and worked with about 20 other publishers as a freelancer later, all university presses for the most part. So the sense of excellence that I learned there, and also at Carnegie Mellon, where I did an undergraduate degree, I really feel like what I expect from myself is pretty tough, where the commas are right. And, I just, as I say, I go over these things 30 to 40 times, and I don't know, if they're any the better for it, but I really try hard. So my biggest thing is just really trying to get this, the manuscript in the best shape I possibly can. And, my publisher tells me my work is the cleanest of anything that he receives, which is really a nice compliment. But, I really try to get things right, although it's very, very difficult.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know. It's a process. It's a lot of work, Well, that's fantastic. Okay. So now the book, The Psychologist's Shadow, and it's a simmering, slow burn suspense. And our guest is the author of that book, Laurie A. Egan. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you, Alan and Dave. It was a pleasure, as always.
Thanks, Laurie.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.